You are listening to Build, Excite, Equip, easy change management for project teams. I am your host, Nicola Graham, coming to you as a business change manager, entrepreneur, and author. As well as discussing top tips and tricks for project teams to use to improve your project adoptions. Let's get started. Hello, everybody. This is Nicola Graham, and we are here for today's podcast. Today's podcast is an interesting one for me. The podcast itself is based on generational views and opinions on virtual reality technology. I have the pleasure to introduce you today to two guests that I have with me that are currently silently giggling away. I'd like to introduce you to my sons. So I have sat with me today, Rhys and Dylan. Hello. Hey, boys.
Hello.
So first and foremost, I didn't want to discuss ages today, but both the boys here are Generation Z. And myself, I'm sat here, actually, believe it or not, as a millennial. I am on the cusp of being a millennial. And I like to think of myself more in the camp of Gen X, okay? I'm going to be honest with you. I have been dying for a reason to bring these two on the show. And I know they're going to cringe when I say this, but these boys give me the best conversations and best debates that I have with anyone. And I always pride myself on the fact that they are two of the most smartest people that I know. So, and I learn from them every day. So I thought, why not ask them to come onto the show today and talk about virtual reality? And yes, I very much bribed them. We are going out for pizza later. And if you look around on the currently in the podcast studio, there are sweets and chocolates all over the place. So I would just like to declare that they have been bribed to be here today. So, boys, virtual reality. My first question to you both. In your own words, how would you explain to the audience of listeners what virtual reality is?
Rhys, would you like to go first?
Like a screen strapped to your head, basically. You get to see different realities, almost like you're within the TV screen.
Okay. I think it's sort of like a way you can escape reality and do things that you could never like picture yourself doing in real life. And it's a way to kind of like, the way virtual reality is good is that it kind of absorbs you completely in the game. And it's just like one of the best forms of like gaming and et cetera.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. I also came prepared today, and I'm actually going to quote a lot of this today for you listeners. I actually asked ChatGPT to give me their version. And ChatGPT also said, virtual reality, VR, is a technology that lets you experience and interact with a computer-generated environment as if it were real. It's like stepping into a video game or a movie. You wear a special headset that covers your eyes, and sometimes you use handheld controllers. This setup allows you to look around, move within, and interact with the virtual world in a way that feels quite real, even though it's all made by a computer. So, well done, boys. I think both of you described that as accurately as ChatGPT does. So, Dylan, what do you like about using VR? I know you touched on it a moment ago, but...
For me, I quite like... not many of my friends have VR headsets, but I do like to use it. Say, for instance, I need to let some anger out, I can go on specific video games that make me feel like I could be, like, fighting people. Mm-hmm. But without the actual like anger and actually hurting people in real life.
Okay, so it gives you that safe space to use your emotions and expel them. Well, that's fair. How about yourself, Rhys?
Well, you can feel more involved within the environment of the game, but you can also do more stuff because you can dodge bullets, you can move around. You've got way more freedom in it compared to traditional consoles, video games, stuff like that.
Okay, thank you for that. My next question, and I know that we've had these conversations before, and you know, I'm really keen to understand what your views are on this. But if you were to go into a time machine right now, and it's gonna send you 10 years in the future, so we're obviously gonna be in 2034 if I can do my maths. How do you think we as humans will be living with virtual reality? What's the world gonna look like to you?
I think VR will be what's the word? Applied into many different parts around life, such as like Zoom calls and meetings with clients and to your coworkers,
mm-hmm.
would most likely be in VR, and like would show, like you could see that it's like as if you're talking to them in real life, as if they're there, but you're not.
Okay, so you're suggesting that we're actually going to have our Zoom meetings in almost a virtual room together, yeah. where we can interact.
Yeah, and it's like many things such as going to a restaurant and ordering off a menu would probably be what I could picture being in some sort of VR, and many other stuff like that.
Okay, how about yourself, Reese?
Well, I mean, 10 years isn't a crazy amount of time to build that much VR, but it would definitely become more prominent, especially with the features of multi-directional trackpads, so you can walk around and get even more immersed. I know they're already working on that right now. So picture it as like a Ready Player One-esque kind of world, I guess.
Okay.
So not the best, but yeah.
And for our listeners that may have not seen Ready Player One, what do you mean by that? Tell us more.
In Ready Player One, it is a few more years into the future where a big corporation is trying to find these Easter eggs within the VR world. And there's these really cool, like almost like walk-in treadmills, but they go every single direction. And you've got like almost like a suit of armor that makes you be able to feel pain and stuff. So basically they've tried to make VR super duper realistic and throw you into a crazy realistic feeling environment, which is definitely possible and is already being worked on as we speak.
And that's actually something that we can do today. You're telling me that we've got, like a trackpad is what, like a bit like a treadmill? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Well, the way they've done it is because a treadmill was tried to be made, but it didn't really work out so well. So instead they've got these like little balls, I guess, and they kind of roll you back into the center no matter which way you go, and then track which way you went. So it's similar, but not really. And then for the suit that makes you feel pain, it's not very good at giving pain blows, but you can definitely feel like people like touch you, basically. So it's just all a bit basic at the moment, though.
So is that something that we can actually buy today, or is it soon to be available?
Well, I know the bodysuit is definitely purchasable, but it's a bit expensive and a bit useless. The trackpad is being worked on, but I have also seen one where there's like slopes around it, so you can put your feet and it will slip back to the middle. But it's still quite a lot of money, like maybe like 8,000, 12,000, I don't know.
I've also seen these like little shoes you can wear, which as you walk, basically you feel like you're walking, but the bottom of the shoes is quite slippery. So as you're walking, it's kind of like as if your feet are slipping behind you and you're just walking like in the centre, same spot.
And that's obviously to stop these moments. I mean, obviously, both Reese and Dylan do have VR headsets, and we've had those moments where I've put them on and smacked my hand on the wall. I'm assuming that's more for that element of things. You know, like to obviously keep it a bit safer, because obviously we see these things, we see the reels where somebody like falls into the TV and whatnot, don't they?
Yeah.
So essentially what you're saying between the two of you is that in 10 years time, we could be in a world where we use these trackpad walking things that can literally enable us to walk on the spot in any direction, wearing a suit that makes us feel everything that we see in the virtual world. And to your point, Dylan, we can enter a space with our work colleagues and no longer work next to them. We can have meetings with them in this, say, like in this virtual world. That's pretty much what you're saying. I think you're talking about the metaverse, aren't you? That's what.
It's very much like that as well. They have like scanners. Some of them have like scanners on the front of the VR where you can go and you can go into a certain app. Like say you want to go on the top of Mount Everest and it scans your computer. And so your computer goes into Mount Everest with you and you can see your screen and everything in the virtual reality.
Wow. Okay. And do you think that we're going to, in 10, 20 years, maybe 20 years by the sounds of it, do you think we're going to be in this world where we're actually going to be sat in a room like today, looking at each other, experiencing things together?
Occasionally. I just feel like maybe... as the quality of VR headsets becomes stronger and stronger, that in some eyes it could be deemed kind of useless.
Okay. Why?
Because we can have, like, why would you want to go into a boring room and talk to your colleagues around a table when you can go, like, you can be around in floating around in space while talking to them and stuff like that.
It's a fair point. It is a fair point. Now I'm gonna open up to our listeners today about a conversation we had, because I think that, I mean, I started this podcast off by saying how I learn from you guys every day. And I think it was probably about 2 years ago when you got your VR headsets to start with. I was really anti them, wasn't I? I was very much like, meh, 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 I don't understand them. Ah, terrified, mum. I don't understand it. Go on, Dylan, you can open your sweets. I told you I was bribing them. So we had this conversation around the fact that for me, like, you guys love your VR, and you definitely loved it back then. And for me, I expressed this fear of the virtual reality world. And what I said to you was, but it doesn't take away true life for me. Do you remember that? Do you remember that conversation that we had?
Yeah.
And I was saying the fact that actually I walk out every day and I experience things. I go skiing, or I go on my bike, or I walk across the road, and all of these moments of mortality are there every single day, and I get buzzes and I get adrenaline rushes and all of these things. And I'm curious to know, do you see that differently to the debate that we had back two years ago? Do you understand where I'm coming from in that, or is it still very much? Because I think at the time you guys were saying, but why would you want to when you can go skiing anywhere in the world, mum, from your bedroom, right? Are you still on board with that thought?
I think as I've gotten older, I start to, like, obviously not that much older, but as I've grown older,
long 2 years.
Sometimes, like, when I'm wearing my AirPods and I listen to specific music, it just, like, kicks in, and I like to look around and feel the mortality and realize that I'm actually in this world and, like, stuff like that, and see everything around me, feel the air against my face, stuff like that. But if I use the example of when we were skiing in Canada during December and I had my big fall, why would I want to, obviously it's the exercise, but why would I want to go to Canada and risk the injury doing, like, a jump or something where I can do it in my own bedroom and have no injury if I fail?
Ah, okay. And you know what? I'm smiling because I love that example. I really do. Because actually, as your mum and your brother, we were terrified seeing that horrible fall that you had. However, did you think that fall helped you learn? Do you think it changed the way you skied after, or thought about how you approach a slope?
Actually, unlike many falls that I have had, I actually don't think that fall affected me too much. Obviously, like, an hour or so after, I was a bit cautious going down. But then the day after, I was actually going faster than I was the time where I hit the big jump.
Yeah, okay, I can definitely get that as well. And it's a valid point. I mean, how about yourself, Reese? Do you think that there is a space for both, or do you think that actually it makes more sense to be in a protective area on your VR?
I'd just say both, because there's some things you can get from VR which are amazing, like disabled people being able to, you know, enjoy the Alps or something crazy like that. But then you can't really get certain experiences yet, at least, by, like, tasting foods, seeing people, having the hormone changes of talking to people in real life. Yeah, you can never get those from VR for now. But so I'd say, yeah, there's a space for both of them in the future.
Yeah, okay, and that's really valid. And I think you know, this is probably my opportunity to recognize that 2 years ago I was very anti VR. I didn't particularly like it. I find myself terrified about this idea. I didn't see any space for it at all. It also made me personally feel really motion sick, didn't it, boys? I always kept getting really sick. Although I must admit, I really liked the laser saber. What was that game
Beat
that we were
saber,
playing?
Yeah.
Beat Saber. You know, so I think my opinion has changed over the last couple of years around my, nope, there's no space for it, versus actually, I think, you know, we're almost similar thought process there around, oh, there's a space for both, right? Okay, so thank you for that. And I think it was a really good conversation around the virtual reality. I wanted to move on to a very hot topic at the moment, and it's been hot in my circle of friends, it's been hot on the media. I think, Rhys, maybe you've even sent me something similar about it. It's about Vision Pro. So let's talk about Apple Vision Pro that's just launched. Out of curiosity, boys, and this is very fresh, I know, can you explain in your own what Apple Vision Pro is? Dylan, do you want to go first?
I think from what I know, the Apple Vision Pro adapts to the way your hands, your eyes and all your feet and stuff like that. It takes your actual body and it puts, so things like the Oculus Quest 2, which we have, they're starting to adapt to it where they show your hands and you can like press stuff with it. But I think the Vision Pro is like much more advanced when it comes to that. And I think what it's trying to do is, I think it's more in a work, it's more of like a work, more of a work setting. But I think it's trying to make, because like holding the controllers still keeps in your mind that, oh, I'm not actually in this, but it's trying to make you feel like you're completely in inside of this VR and make these experiences 100 times more real for you.
Okay, brilliant, thank you. How about yourself, Rhys?
Well, I don't know much about the Vision Pro, but when I've been playing VR, I'm in a totally different reality. Whereas for the Vision Pro, they try to combine realities. This is called augmented reality. So it's like you're almost like half in reality and half in the VR world. So you've got screens and stuff that pop up into the point where you can walk around with like a massive screen playing your Netflix show and stuff. So I think the Vision Pro is more focused on like watching stuff, because I haven't seen many games in it, but it's more based on just like having loads of screens everywhere. And it looks very dystopian nightmare to me, though.
Does it really? Well, that's interesting. So between the VR and the Pro Vision, your initial concept is a bit, oof, about this reality.
It looks a bit like the Iron Man helmet, how he's seen reality, but he's also seen all these pop-ups with, oh, this is blah, 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 just like notifications, you know?
Yeah, interesting. Okay, and actually, I'm going to do another quote. And this is coming directly from the Apple website. Apple Vision Pro, a spatial computer that blends digital content and apps into your physical space and lets you navigate using your eyes, hands, and voice. And the main features, you have Apps View, so you can open all of your apps and arrange them in your space how you like. People View, you have FaceTime calls, so you can have FaceTime calls with people. You can send messages and you can view contact information. And then you have this environments view, which puts three-dimensional scenes into the surrounding, like mountain scenery. And I think, Rhys, I think you sent me a reel recently with one, didn't you?
Do you
want to say which that was?
So I saw this guy, which definitely sold me a bit on the Vision Pro. And he had his Vision Pro on and he walked over, went on the toilet and then changed the scenery to a mountain scene. And that's quite appealing, actually.
I bet it is. If you've got teenagers, you'll know what I mean.
Hey, it's Anna here from BeChange, and I am quickly interrupting Nick to let you know that you can join the waitlist. Waitlist for what? The Be Methodology 2-day live online practitioner course. These 2 days will be packed full of practical information that you can apply to your project straight away. So, what are you waiting for? Find the link in the podcast description below to join. Back to you, Nick.
Looking at the videos and things like that, I think you can watch your Netflix on there and FaceTime people whilst. And to Rhys's point, you have this double reality. What did you exactly call it? Sorry, it was
augmented reality.
Augmented reality. So you are having that kind of information coming up in your real space. I'm going to try and stay non-opinionated about that. So I also looked at the cost of these. Now, my understanding today, they are only available in America. I don't think we can get them in the UK yet. I think they're on their way very soon, but you're looking at a price of $3,500 to $3,900 for a set or for a provision. And I guess that obviously is based on what features you want to have. Question, next question, boys. About what we've just spoken regarding the provision, do you think they classify as virtual reality? Do you think they classify in that space?
Personally, I wouldn't class it as virtual reality because on what Reese said about how it's more augmented, it takes away the virtual aspect of it, and the fact that the whole point of the virtual in my eyes is to like do things that are not in this world, like such as you can go onto a Star Wars game and fly around in the Millennium Falcon around space and such and so and so. Whereas like in this augmented reality, everything in it you can experience in real life.
Right, okay, and that's, you know, I think that's a really interesting point because you're transporting yourself into a place that you can't be in real life, and this gives you that sense of being in both. How about yourself, Reese? Do you think it's classified?
No, not really, because most VRs have got an aim to do something. Like, for example, the Oculus Quest is very game orientated for around my age, I guess, whereas the Vision Pro looks very, like, almost work-based and a bit boring. I don't really know what you're meant to do with it. Like, yeah, watch a few videos on it, pop up a few tabs. But apart from doing work stuff, I haven't really seen any games to do with it. So it doesn't look super entertaining to me. Mm. It just looks like a tool, basically.
Do you think it sounds a bit more for adults? And sorry, I don't mean that derogatively. I mean, like, you're talking about productivity and work and functionality and features. Do you think that's more of a kind of a grown-up thing to do?
Yeah, like I said, it's more like a tool. It's like how Iron Man, it might help him to translate words, or having extra tabs up in random walls where you wouldn't have screens definitely help, you know? Mm. It's just like a all you've got, like, what is it? It's like a multi-tool, isn't it? It's just got loads of different screens, loads of different tools to help you just do ordinary things, I guess.
Yeah, interesting. I happen to have that thought similarity with you both. And actually, to quote again, whilst you'll never hear Apple use these words, the Apple Vision Pro is essentially a virtual reality device. It blocks out the real world and replaces it with a digital experience. I'm not agreeing with that, and I happen to feel similar to you guys. But you know, essentially, this augmented impression definitely resonates more with me. And it's quite interesting because the Apple Pro Vision is one of those spaces. So I mentioned a moment ago how 2 years ago I was anti-VR goggles, terrified of them, didn't understand their place. Well, I had a similar experience with the Pro Vision recently. It was probably just when they launched it about a year ago. They sent this video out. And in that video, it was, Apple Pro Visions. And this man was wearing their goggles, right? And he was cooking and chopping carrots. And he's watching Netflix or some sort of TV program in the space that is his kitchen. And his little, like, 3 or 4-year-old runs up and's like, daddy, daddy, daddy. And he looks at her and he's got these big goggles on and he's like, that's great. And he's kind of giving this girl the thumbs up. And I think the point of the video was, yay, look, you can be a parent and chop your food and watch your TV. And actually that horrified me because, like, when you guys were kids, we didn't have this. So when you come up and wanted me to look at something, you had my full attention. You didn't have a blocker between us, you know. And for me, I just feel that humans need that human connection. And I think that VR has this space where you can kind of go, right, I'm going to go play my games, and you put it on and off you go. But the Pro Vision gives you this excuse to basically have your phone in your face, in your vision all the time. And then you're losing even more that human connection. And it, like, advertises things like you can see your friends and your friends can see you. But again, the video that I saw, the poor woman comes in and she's like, hi, Suzanne. And the woman turns around and she goes, hello. You can't even see her eyes. And you're just looking at it going, where is the human contact? Like, we're losing this. So, I guess I'm at the start where I was 2 years ago, where I'm like, oh, I can't really see a use case for me. Do you think that? Does that resonate you? Do you feel that if you were then talking to me, say I'm cooking and you walk in, Dylan, you want to talk about your exams or your results or even your day, whatever it might be, do you think that we're going to lose that human contact if I turn around with my provisions on and go, what did you say?
I mean, what you said about being like glued to your phone kind of just sounds like me walking into the kitchen anyway. But
fair.
I think the Vision Pro isn't there's no excuse to have it around the house. But I think when it comes to things like education and work, people who are more visual learners and they learn and are educated based off seeing things in front of them more than text-based and stuff like that, I think the Vision Pro can really help with that, because doing things like, say for computer science, what I was doing today was Boolean logic gates. I don't know if I pronounce that right, which is like, obviously I'm at a basic level, but it's AND or NOT gates. I think for people who benefit off a visual, you could like, in this Vision Pro, you could use it to like create your own Boolean logic gates and stuff like that. And it could really help people who need it.
Okay, and that's, again, I just stand here kind of going, that's another area I didn't think about, you know. So that's a really valid point. Thank you, Dylan. How about yourself, Reese? Do you feel it removes the human connection?
I'd say, well, yeah, because when I'm in my room playing VR, I'm having that by myself time or playing with a friend, and it's pretty much the same as an Xbox. I'm just playing with my friend, and when it's dinner time, I'll take it off and run downstairs and then be in the moment. Whereas the Vision Pro, there's less excuses to have to take it off, so you could definitely see yourself getting a little too glued and attached to it, and it could definitely become a problem in the future when people are a bit when it drops prices. It will definitely become a problem, because right now the huge price tag, which is Apple is really known for, it's too much for what it is, to be honest. But it will definitely drop down, and I was even talking to my friend about this. When it drops down, it might become a bigger problem, because there'll be so many people with it. You'll be walking around like a dystopian nightmare, just everyone waving their fingers in the air, putting screens up and stuff. It would look very weird, to be honest.
Mm. Can I say one more thing?
Of course you can.
I think going along the dystopian kind of thoughts about it, if we become and grow into a society where people are just walking around wearing this virtual reality headset, I feel that the use of propaganda from like things from like government officials and stuff like that could be really effective against what could be, such as say we're walking around the street, right, and we see random like pop-ups, like say you walk past a shop and then it like pops up saying, oh, you need this and this.
Mm.
Yeah, it could really help like people of higher authority like kind of control us and like put thoughts into our head while around our everyday life.
Okay, it could become potentially a marketing machine. It's another thought-provoking point, actually. Thank you. So based on what we've just been speaking about, do you think whether people accept this new technology or not is actually age related? The three of us have had our opinions. Do you think it's based on age that people will accept a provision or something different?
I think age is just one of the many factors that that sell the Vision Pro to many. But I think people who have like grown up, obviously me and Reese have grown up with technology, but kids nowadays who are growing up with virtual reality headsets in their life would definitely have a different opinion. Mm. But obviously every human, well, most humans are going to have that feeling inside of them that they are like a few interaction with somebody in real life, like standing in front of them.
What about grandmas? What about your nanas? Do you think they could embrace this? Or your dad or your mum?
I
mom?
Was looking the other day in my English class, we were reading about the invention of the train, mm-hmm. and cinema as well. And so people were watching this train be released in cinema, and we were answering questions on like the generational thoughts of stuff like that. And like it says in the script, it talks about how the first thing he notices about this new train is the first thing that comes to mind is about accidents and breakdowns and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I think people with older experiences, such as Nana, yeah, who have grown up in a time with very little technology, will see that things like virtual reality are taking the beautiful and like the beautiful aspects of morality out of like our everyday lives.
And do you agree with that? Understand it? Empathize with it? Think that Nana's just too old?
To a degree, I think Nana just eventually just has to accept that this is the time we're living in. But obviously, to a degree, that soon everything will everything. A quote from that is, "Everything beautiful will soon be like immortal."
Oh. Okay. That's it. Again, you just you know, I'm going off on all these different thoughts with you, and it's a really, really thought provoking. So you catch me off every time, Dylan. Thank you. Rhys, what do you think? Do you think it's age-related, whether people accept the provision or not?
Well, age-related is kind of hard to describe, whereas our grandma probably wouldn't accept it because she's just not grown up with it. Maybe when I'm older, I'll definitely be more open to the idea of it because I've been born into a time of technology, unlike the older generations. I mean, I have got my grandma to wear VR headsets because why wouldn't she want to try on a little headset, a little roller coaster for 30 minutes? But I would see no reason why, even the younger age, why would I want a Vision Pro? I mean, I've never heard any of my friends say they want a Vision Pro because it's just it has nothing really interesting about it that appeals to too old or too young audiences right now. I think it's more middle age, working class people kind of want it because it just makes ordinary life look a bit more interesting, being able to have extra screens. It's just more work related. I don't see how many people would use it, to be honest.
Okay, no, it's a fair point as well. It's interesting because when I was preparing the scripts, you know, we're working through the questions together for this podcast today. I also spoke to Anna. Obviously, you boys know Anna. Anna works with myself. And Anna, she calls herself a Zillennial, which I discovered today is a kind of a on-the-cusp group of millennials versus Gen Zs. And what she said is the reason they're called Zillennials is because they've spent some time without tech, but essentially they've grown up with tech. And actually, we started looking at the Vision Pro together and collecting some data, and she was sat next to me going, oh my word. And it's fair to say that she really struggled with the concept of the Vision Pro herself. She thought it was horrifying. And again, to your point that you made, Rhys, about this augmented reality, she really found it eerie that she's in her lounge and she puts this Vision Pro on and then she's still in her lounge and all of a sudden this data pops up. And what she said, and again, I'm going to quote, is, "I find everything is so fatiguing technology now. From AM to PM, tech is constantly in my life and it's just exhausting and I'm getting really fatigued by it." And the thing is, tech is constantly changing and it's also getting exhausting about the constant change. So Anna's coming at that from a space of, actually, I'm getting really fed up with this, to be honest. I'm getting fed up with all this new stuff coming out. And then what she said is, "I like going to the gym class because for 1 hour, I don't have my phone. If I went to normal gym, I'd have my phone and I'd still be tapping around and checking my emails and stuff. But when I go to a gym class, I have to put it away and it's so nice." However, I also have some friends in my Gen X range who are really into the tech. So they're really techie people and they're dying for the provisions. And again, to your point, Rhys, this middle-aged working class, the people that are in this corporate environment, actually, you can see the use case for this. You're spot on with what my friends are saying. And they're kind of like, oh, I can't wait to buy them. I want to buy them for my nephews. They might want to think twice based on our conversation. But, you know, so there's... It's really interesting because we're now talking about all these different generations of ages and we're all having different views on it. And I don't think that they're particularly the same, and I certainly don't think it's based on an age. So boys, I've sent you an introduction to the Vision Pro, so it's a video. So I'm just going to ask you to pop your ear pods on, and you can go ahead and watch that for 2 minutes. And I'm just going to talk a little bit more about how this moves into the business context, and you can carry on eating your sweets. The reason I wanted to have this podcast today, and the reason I asked the boys to come in and do this with me, is because I wanted to start talking about the generational differences in a working place. Okay, so we now work, and I repeat this because it's true, we are now five generations of people that work together in an organization. So you do have people as young as my sons, right through to as old as their grandparents. Okay, so we are massively different in our ages. But it's actually clear from this podcast that the individual circumstances are also important. It depends on somebody whether they're confident with technology. It depends on where you grew up. It also depends on your hobbies and interests. You know, if we go back to the Anna example, I know one of her biggest hobbies is books. She loves to read her books. So actually, for her, maybe the technical side is exhausting because of that. Who knows? So if we were to move this into a project change that's happening into an organisation, let's just take one of your projects today and let's look at that and think, right, okay, we're going to throw a change into this organisation with these five different generations of people. Generation will be important, but also other factors will be important in that also. Firstly, the department you work in, the kind of role that you're doing will have an impact on the way that you embrace change. Your confidence in technology will also be another reason for embracing or resisting change. Your workload pressures and your stresses will be another one. The fear of loss. Some people fear loss a lot more than others. And there's also everybody in your organization will have different ways of digesting information, i.e. some people will enjoy a newsletter that comes out every week to read things. Other people will digest information from a one-to-one conversation. And then there's also those variable ways to learn. I think Dylan touched on it earlier, you know, the way that he likes to learn at school is different to some of his peers. Some people want these videos that are self-paced, they can learn them in their own time, short and easy to digest. And others would prefer to read a manual. So you are literally working with so many variants of people within your organization that when you throw a project change into them, it's going to have a different impact dependent on all of these factors. So let me just say that again. If you are working in a project that evokes change to a group of people, how many types of different people do you think you could potentially be trying to market that change to? And if you think about that for a moment, just think how everyone's going to perceive that change is going to be different. So if we were to look at 100 staff, say you're dealing with 100 staff and they literally could have multiple variables of the 7 points that I made above. And that's if there are more than those seven. So this could mean that you are taking, you're approaching your project with a blanket, one-size-fits-all approach to comms and training. Okay, so everyone's going to receive this kind of communication and this kind of training. But actually, you're only going to reach a fraction of that group with the way that they need to digest the information that you're giving them. So it's all about making sure that your engagements actually mean something to everyone. And there are some ways that you can do this. So in my build model of the Build, Excite, Equip methodology, we talk about understanding the people early on. So if you know the change impact groups early, you can also literally ask people to explain how they prefer to digest communication and what their training needs are. And then if you literally understand your social networks, who listens to whom and who they ask for help, you could potentially start to create really strong engagement plans, knowing your audience and being able to really impact individuals based on what they need and how they need to receive that information. So let's take four group types, okay? You're now going out. You've got four type groups. Four group types. You could then start to rely on champions. And if you rely on champions to help you with these different groups, those champions then can be accountable for applying suitable engagement even further to different people. So your four groups now has been extended out to another four different kinds of groups that somebody else is going to do for you. So it's going to reduce your workload in doing this. That means that you are going to genuinely be able to impact and communicate and engage with so many more people just from doing some research early on in the build stage. And the earlier you do this in your project, the better. So if you can do this through your pre-initiation or your design phases of your project, this is amazing. However, if you're sat here today listening to this podcast thinking, darn it, it's too late, it's never too late. That's the great news. So the BIM methodology has been designed to be agile. You can apply it into agile projects as well as waterfall. And the concept is to work out exactly what you need based on the size of your project and the phase that you're currently in. And it's something that you can pick up anytime. You can even jump on my self-paced courses right now. It's going to take you 4 hours to go through the practitioner where you can learn how to do this real life. Anyone can be a change leader and any project can stand out and make the difference with the existing resources they have. It's as simple as that. So, back to the boys. You finished the video? What do you think? What's your verdict? Would you like to have a pro vision or not?
I mean, it looks pretty good, of course. But the main thing that puts me off at the moment is the price tag. Like,
what happens if mum's paying?
Yeah, I'll take it then. But like, it's one of those things that, as a techie myself, of course I'd love to have it to my collection. Why would I ever say no to having another cool VR headset? I'm excited to see what the graphics are like, how it would affect what I do. And overall, yeah, I'd say I'd want one. It's just more the price, and it's not so appealing. Like I wouldn't pick it over my Oculus Quest, I would say. I've had countless hours, in fact, on my Oculus Quest, having good fun, playing games, talking with friends, and I definitely would take that over having a Vision Pro. But at the end of the day, I'd definitely have one.
Perfect. Okay, and how about you, Dills?
I think I'm actually quite fascinated about it. I think I would like to have a Vision Pro, because I feel in later years it can adapt, and one of my favourite things ever would be to have like a VR game, quite like Grand Theft Auto, where you can go around in like a place like your town, like Richmond or something,
mm-hmm.
and you can like obviously like rob banks and stuff like that as if it's like Grand Theft Auto. And obviously I think somebody who like Dad, who's very techie, and obviously I think he's also millennial.
No, he's Gen X.
Gen X, sorry. He would definitely like Vision Pro as you know him, because he's also up to date with everything with his Xbox, his PC, his everything. So I think somebody like Dad would definitely enjoy a Vision Pro. Could I also please have a sip of your water?
Yes, of course you can have a sip of my water. Yeah, okay, right, that's fine. Well, I know what I'm getting you for Christmas in about 20 years when I can save for it. But boys, thank you so much. I know that it took a lot of guts to be here today, and I appreciate you being here. It has been really insightful. And to all of our listeners, I hope you've enjoyed today's podcast. I hope you found it useful. Please do link in with me. Reach out if you've got any thoughts or ideas of the next podcast you want me to do. I'm always looking for ideas, so that's great. Also, I'm taking other co-hosts, so do reach out if you feel that you've got an interesting conversation to say. I won't be bribing you with sweets. So until the next time, have a wonderful day. Have a wonderful week. Thank you for listening. Be sure to subscribe, and I will speak to you soon. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm always looking for ideas, so that's great. Also, I'm taking other co-hosts, so do reach out if you feel that you've got an interesting conversation to say. I won't be bribing you with sweets. So until the next time, have a wonderful day, have a wonderful week. Thank you for listening. Be sure to subscribe, and I will speak to you soon. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.